Welcome back again to another week, Player's Voice, The Barbershop. I'm your host, Mark Gray, and it brings me much joy. I said it last time, I'll say it again. The most entertaining man The Barbershop has ever seen. We're working on getting him his own 1 hour long Player's Voice special.
Listen, I was suspended for PED use, allegedly. Allegedly. I want to straighten this out, allegedly. So I was suspended for PED use. Came back, my second sample came back negative, so I'm back on the scene. It's good to be back, man. Good to see you folks, man.
Always a pleasure to have one of the original Barbershop members, TJ. And then for the down part of the show, unfortunately still here, the worst producer in the business, A1. How you doing today, sir?
Doing well. Thank you, sir.
All right. He is getting worse by the week. This is awesome. Since we talked last, well, matter of fact, we can.
Since we talked last, I think Bush was in office.
We didn't get. Well, let's get your opinion on a couple of things real quick as we run through just to start off. Pacquiao Mayweather, fight of the year, biggest thing in the history of everything.
Biggest pillow fight you ever seen in your life. I mean, it was awesome. Like, feathers were flying.
Was it what you expected? Guys,
Mike Tyson said it best. He said, "These guys are businessmen, and I'm a natural born killer." When I was walking into the ring, I could give a damn about how much, who was making what, how many rounds, if I get cut. I was going in there to rip a head off. Manny may fight like that, but Mayweather's like, I got to get out of here by one. I don't need any bruises, any cuts. I've got to be at the Bellagio at 3. I've got another promotional. Like, I don't knock it. It just, what it will do to his brand is, he will never, ever, it'll take people in a barbershop to always mention him when you mention the great fighters when time goes on. He will not have the impact that people talk about a Ray Leonard or people talk about a Hearns or people talk about even Mike Tyson or even Roy Jones. I mean, you got people who sit and debate, is Roy Jones better than Floyd? And it's simply impact, man. It's my dad used to tell me something when I would talk about fighting my brothers, and he says, you have to be willing to take some to give some, right? But Floyd doesn't fight that fight, and that's what makes fights. You got to be willing, like, Manny Pacquiao's going to give you a chance to knock me out. And if you take that chance, there's a chance I may knock you out. Floyd just says, you know what?
No.
I don't want to take a chance to knock you out, nor do you, do I want you knocking me out. Where's my check?
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you for coming out. James Brown, throw the towel over me. Let's get out of here.
Yep.
Fine. But what the impact is going to have 20 years from now? Is it'll be like, yeah, you know, there was this guy that was undefeated named Floyd Mayweather, and everybody like, yeah, but did you know Canelo Alvarez knocked out seven guys in a row?
I think, if we'll think about it, and the weirdest thing is like, so to bring it a little closer home to more public form, if you sit down in a barbershop now, or even go 10 years out from now, and you ask 10 different guys, and let's say this barbershop is not in Texas, it's anywhere, it's any other 49 states, and you say, who's the best running back that ever played? Not one guy is going to tell you Emmitt Smith.
Nope.
They're not. And, you know, hats off to Emmitt. But the fact is, there's a difference between having the awards and winning the respect. Somebody, if you sit at that same barbershop, one guy might tell you a Bo Jackson, who finishes not even in the top 300 in rushing.
Absolutely.
Somebody might tell you Earl Campbell's the greatest person. Another guy is going to tell you, I've never seen anybody run like Gale Sayers.
Adrian Peterson, if you ask me for my money.
Right. You know, so it's going to be those, and it's not just about stats.
Floyd
may, you know, whether he goes 15-0, whether he goes 100-0, I don't think that anybody will ever say he's the greatest boxer who ever lived.
It can't be. This is why it can't be. It's because still to this day, what was his signature moment? What was the moment?
Signature fight.
What was that
knockout
moment when you look back and you went, that's when I knew he was going to be great.
What? When that guy put on the clinic that day.
What do you mean? You mean when he went 12 rounds with Manny Pacquiao and they both left the fight like, you want to do it again? Like, nobody was cut. Nobody's bruised. Nobody's bad. That's, you know, that's not boxing to me. How I remember boxing is, I remember the tape that they wrap your gloves with, that's going to have a little blood on it. Somebody's going to have a cut, you know.
The post-game interview, the post-fight interview, you knew who lost.
Yeah. You know,
watch any of these fights, these Floyd fights, and if you didn't see the fight and just walked in, at the interview afterwards, you'd be like, which guy, did they fight yet? That's what you would probably say. And it's like, one looks tired.
But deep down, I really think that's that point that we're bringing up, that's what's going to drive Floyd to get a loss. At one point in time, he's going to say, you know what? I'm tired. I'm because his ego, his ego is such that, yeah, I got the zeros, I got the money, but he still hasn't won the adulation that he wants. That's why instead of being as brash as he was on previous, those Showtime when they fought, instead of being as brash as he used to be,
right.
Now he's a little more humble.
No, he
because he wants
more respect.
Because he needs that adulation. Certain people in the world operate on the stance of, yeah, I can have all the success, but if everyone's not looking at me going, they love me, none of this means anything.
I felt like when I watched Floyd, though, while he is a lot of things, I felt like he's in touch with himself, though, in terms of, like, I don't think Floyd thinks that he's a knockout. I don't think he would try to and tell you that he was a knockout puncher. I don't think
either.
He has any desire to trade punches with Manny Pacquiao or anybody else.
I just think that as he grows in his late stages of his career to retirement and closer, he's going to want to leave an impact. And he's left an impact as far as the monetary value. Huge impact. But he has no fight impact as far as I'm picking this fight because I remember when Floyd Mayweather, was it? Out of the 49 you've seen, which one was it?
He said it. I mean, there's a reason. His impact, the Floyd Mayweather brand is 100% money.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what it is. He doesn't sell you that he's the greatest fighter, that, you know, he's knocking this guy, or even that, you know, Mike Tyson's thing was he was the baddest man on the planet.
Baddest man.
And you
believed it.
Oh, absolutely. and all these other guys. And then, you know, the smaller ones were, you know, whether it be Ray Leonard's, I'm the baddest guy who's 160 pounds. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't think Floyd has that desire. I don't think Floyd, he just wants to be the richest man on the planet.
And you know what? Like I said, man, where sports is going right now, and you hear these, you know, hundreds and hundreds of stories of athletes gone good to gone broke. I take my hat off to him. You know, stack as many chips as you can, brother, because you always hear about later down the road. Oh yeah, it was that Uncle Sam guy came and knocked on your door. came and knocked on your door at 52 when you're sitting with your grandkid on your lap, like, yeah, about that $100 million that went unreported. I mean, you just see it, or the losses and things, and then you start to slowly see the bricks falling off the temple. So, hats off to him in that respect. But as far as boxing, when I think of dominant boxers that dominate an era, I think of guys like Roy Jones. And yeah, you could say, and I say it all the time, yeah, the dude that Roy Jones fought did change my oil right before the fight. Okay, that is true. He was, all right? He was a police officer. There was one firefighter. There was one EMT. I believe there was a doctor that gave birth in there.
Right.
But regardless, when he went in the ring, he knocked cats out. You know, it was exciting. It was, you know, forceful. It was everything that you think that should be involved in combat sports. With Floyd, it's the undercooked steak. It's no salt, no pepper, but it's just a fancy steakhouse. So it's just a good steak.
In one sentence or less, this is what I said, just because I want to move off of this. I told A1, and I think Slim was here, I can't remember. But my sentence was, I feel like Floyd Mayweather almost single-handedly killed boxing. Agree, disagree?
I think his, yeah, I'm going to say I agree. I think that the plan that he's designed and how he's chosen to fight. Well, I don't know if it'll kill boxing. I think it has. And I'm hoping that we're getting this young influx of fighters that really want to go in and really want to trade some leather. You know, I watched the Canelo Alvarez, Kirkland last fight. Now, no one should be like Kirkland just walking in there like, hey, best shot, down the pipe, go ahead, hit me with it. But you still want to see that. And I think what you'll find in the, you know, months and years to come, is that slowly people will forget Floyd Mayweather because we're going to get that influx of fighters that how we remember boxing. Listen, everything is on a loop. It's just when the loop comes back around.
Right.
You know, so.
Getting into, which I've never, would, it's almost sad to even bring this up, so I want to get straight into it. In the sports, the biggest thing, the Clippers story. Let's start with that, the meltdown of the Clippers. So we all know what happened now at this point. So the question now that I bring to both of you guys is, I want pecking order, 1 through 3, and if you feel like going through 5, who's to blame? Blame needs to be, we saw what happened right in front of our own two eyes. Whose fault is this?
One is Doc Rivers.
I agree. I got one is Doc Rivers. And matter of fact, I go with Doc Rivers gets two spots.
Yeah, I'm about to say he gets one. He gets one, two, and five.
He gets coaching and GM spot.
Yeah.
And I think Doc Rivers, the GM, gets spot number one.
Absolutely.
Spot number one.
They're seven players strong, bro.
And one of them is your son.
One of them is your son.
One of them is your son.
And one of them.
Now,
one is a guy that should be a nose tackle for the Skins.
So you can say to yourself, wow, Rivers played better than anybody thought he was capable of playing and had a handful of good games. But at the end of the day,
he's still Austin Rivers.
Was Austin Rivers. When the series was said and done, you look down at your bench and they're bringing off firepower. They're bringing off Josh Smith or whoever.
And you're looking at Hedo Turkoglu going, Hedo.
Heated.
Wind the clock back, baby. Jump in the time machine. Put on those old pants.
Look down and you see Turkoglu and you're asking him and he's like, Coach, you should have told me before the game. I didn't even put that much ice.
Big baby, put those dots down and come over here and get
and
this.
And then
game.
Big baby, you're asking yourself, like, what other team does Big Baby can even contribute on? What, like, if the Clippers released him today.
The Chicago Bears just switched to a 3-4.
Right.
We do need a 5-tech.
That'd be my best bet.
We need a 5-tech.
And then, so we bring off Crawford, which we know he's a scorer. That's what he is. So you got one guy who scores.
Destroys buffets.
And then you got a big, and so when you're looking at yourself and you're saying, huh? So I think Doc Rivers GM definitely goes one.
Doc Rivers coach is two or 1A, 1B or two, whatever you want to put it, because of just one game. One game and Doc Rivers, the coach, goes that high. Game six, up 19. And you lose to everybody else but the reigning MVP.
Right. See, to me,
that's like, coaching, bro.
So where I kept getting the messages about game seven, including yourself, I didn't even care about game seven because to me, I checked out at game
six.
Like what happened in game six was like, dude, game seven shouldn't have even happened. Like, you know what I mean? So it was like, no, normally when those type of things happen, like when it was the Red Sox and that World Series and it wasn't about the game seven when they beat the Yankees. They lost in game five once it folds, it's done. So that when the Red Sox beat the Yankees in that game seven, they didn't beat them in game seven.
No, they beat two games ago.
The series was over when you blew that. And so you can't do, especially in a scenario where you don't have home court advantage. So game seven is back at their house.
Let me tell you something. If I was Doc Rivers in that game, 19-point lead, I would have blown every timeout I had before the game was over. I would not be going in the last 2 minutes with the time. Because at some point in time, I got to say, look, you're going to literally see me not letting this ship sink. Someone else is going to take this blame. I don't care.
As much as we even hate it and everybody hates it, Dwight Howard and Josh Smith, I'm fouling them.
Everybody.
Give that a shot.
Everybody.
Put them on the line.
Kevin McHale hacked him. Get on the free throw line. Everybody's getting it, man. This is like the Red Cross, brother.
Yeah, I mean, Josh Smith, at least try. Give Josh Smith and Dwight Howard. See, like, they're on fire catching alley-oops and dunks. Let's see how they look at the free throw
line. Like this.
Like, you know, let's give that a shot.
Hey, kid, you ever played before? How many fouls you got? None. I don't even know your name. Get in.
Get in there and hack somebody.
Go.
I think
Doc Rivers severely dropped the ball to me, coaching-wise.
And then I look at things like Matt Barnes played 23 minutes. He started, and he scored 0 points. So now I can't look at a game seven and say the reason they lost is Matt Barnes, because the fact is the series shouldn't be decided on Matt Barnes. You know what I mean? So at that point, that goes back to Doc Rivers, because why is Matt Barnes just starting? That's when it's still things like that. And you're like, why is Matt Barnes just starting small forward?
But you know what that is though? MG?
Matt Barnes is a glue. He's a six guy. He's a seven guy.
That's where the old school NBA coaches, i.e. your Thibodeaux and your Doc Rivers of the old school mentality, that's where they lose games to the innovative minds of basketball, to say that Scott Brooks says, Kendrick Perkins, you can't make a layup, but you sure are mean and foul hard. $50 million and start.
Right.
Look at Matt Barnes. Matt Barnes, we need a tough guy. You go out there, you can foul guys hard and throw the N-word around, and we need you to start. Popovich is like, yeah, no, you can't get it. No, you can't even get a tryout. Popovich is like, hey, can you shoot? Can you spread the floor?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll take him. I'll take him over here.
I
don't need the foul guy. I don't need that guy. And just go around the NBA right now and look at the teams that are in. What team is in that just has a guy that's like, yeah, he could go 0 points, but he is so Oh God, he's incredible.
Right.
You should see how he stares at. You should just see how he stares at Dwight Howard. It is just utterly amazing.
No, you're right. Like I said, I've always said that the thing that sums up like the greatness of Popovich is a guy like D.L. that nobody else knows what to do with him. He's like, I know what to do with him. He's a big man who can shoot and pass the ball
and dribble.
And so like, I'll put him in my system.
Yeah.
And then it works.
No, he doesn't need to know how to throw the flying crossbow of Kelly Olynyk and dislocate his shoulder. He just needs to play basketball. And I think with Matt Barnes is, you know, and I've had a chance to meet Matt Barnes, is the guy he is on the court is nothing like the guy he is off the court. Like, he's nothing like that. But on the court, it's just like tough guy persona. And I'm like, in 1993, oh God, that would have been awesome on the Bulls.
Right. Or the Pistons.
Yeah, or the Pistons. Or a myriad of teams.
Right.
But in 2015, no one's in the game going, sheesh, Matt Barnes is upset.
Right.
Like, everyone knows if you foul me too hard, you're going to lose a game check.
Right.
You like, back then, you were really worried about, like,
yeah,
you know,
if he's going to punch me
like,
in my face.
If Charles Oakley hits me, I'm going to need a new mold.
Right.
I know it. I know it. And he's going to play the next game. And like, and he's not going to get fined. And I'm going to be out.
Funniest thing, Doug Collins, they asked him last night. They were talking about trash talking. And Sage Steele turns to Doug Collins. He said, back in your day, were you a big trash talker? And he said, back in my day, it was a $100 fine for getting punched, for punching somebody in the face. So, no, I didn't talk any trash. Because he said, a guy could just turn. He said, a big guy. He said, you talk trash to a big guy, he just turns and punches you in his face. Pays $100 and keeps it moving.
$100.
So he said, back in our day, there were no fake tough guys.
He's giving that ballet. There you go. Keep that.
Yeah.
Change.
So he said, back in his day, there was no fake tough guys.
And that's,
like, you just punch somebody in the face.
I think that's where you get these coaches that think they gotta have these guys because right now the game is so free flowing. It's so much about skill. It's so much about being able to shoot the basketball that just leave your tough at the door. Work on your three. Thanks. Appreciate it. Like, dude, you know, cool. Your net tattoos look really intimidating, but why are you shooting 10% from the corner? Let's just discuss that. Like, I could care less. I mean, Tony Allen, who doesn't really play like a tough guy role, as like he's going to beat you up, but he is nothing but a defender, right? I watched him play Golden State, and they just said, you know what? Pass it to Tony.
Right.
Tony, I'm going to go to the locker room.
Let you shoot that.
You can hoist that.
Yep.
You can hoist that.
Absolutely.
And Tony threw that ball everywhere but in the hoop.
Right.
One hit the shot clock. One hit the ball boy in the nets. Another one hit the coach in the side of the head. So all that's fine and dandy, but what the Euro influx has helped this because
you gotta be able to put that ball in the basket at the end of the day.
All that matters. And Popovich was ahead of the curve, and that's why you're seeing these Popovich disciples teams ahead of the curve.
Absolutely.
Like, and then you get a guy who's cerebral and smart like a Steve Kerr, is like, yeah, I know the triangle was awesome for us. But I look over there and I don't see Michael Jordan. Funny thing.
Right.
Like, I'm over there looking. I for sure don't see Scottie Pippen. So, yeah, we're going to play this other basketball.
Can you think about at the beginning of this season, the options that Steve Kerr had were the Knicks and Golden State? And you're thinking, Phil, like, I get it. Nice relationship and it's been great and you've been good to me. But, like, you want me to come there, run your offense. Who's the coach? Like, you know, Derek Fisher, he's younger than me. If you look at it, Steve Kerr, why would he even entertain that option of the Knicks? And if Phil's going over there with this idea, they're going to run the triangle with, God knows what they have.
But
over there.
How about the irony of this? The irony of Phil Jackson being a first time GM and Steve Kerr's like, dude, I've already had that job. So I've evaluated rosters for a living. I know that roster's not good enough.
Right.
I don't care what you tell me right now, how many incense sticks you pull out and light in here and doobies we smoke during this zen. I'm not coming. Nope. I can see this roster. I know that Jose Calderon is
a good backup point guard.
Is a great YMCA PG. I know
Calderon's a good backup point guard. He's not your franchise point guard.
I know Andre Barnyardi is a D League All Star. I know this.
Right. And he's not even gonna be healthy at that.
Yeah.
No, man. And so, no, I put a lot of that on Doc Rivers. And Colin said it, and I think he hit the nail on the head. Let's let you know him, he does. I'm a big Colin fan. And he was saying the thing is that Doc Rivers is so media friendly. He's a nice guy. Everybody likes him. He did media for so long. He's one of the guys. So he says nobody ever says anything bad about him. And he says the fact is like when you pull out his resume, it's
ain't
just
a lot of
not,
winning. I mean, he's got one ring.
Right. On a team that was very well put together.
Hello. I mean, that's what, Dream Team minus two players?
Right. So, you know, he said he kind of lucked up there, but he's like, you know, in terms of, will players, do players like him and do players want to come and play for him? Yes. But his in-game coaching, it's nothing he's done that shows greatness. Definitely nothing he's shown to be. I've never watched a game, even back in those days when they were in the finals, and it was like, I never saw him. I was like, man, that was a hell of an adjustment he made by doing X, Y, and Z. It almost seemed like he made no adjustments in the Celtics era, which is, I mean,
he didn't have to.
That,
and the reason he didn't have to in the Celtics era is because he had a ton of vets, and they were moving parts. They were like, it's like, all right, KG, if just so happens you come down, you match up on Derrick Rose, fine, we're good. We're still good. Okay, Ray Allen, you're matched up on, you know,
KG could play 3, 4, and 5. Pierce could play 2, 3, or 4.
You know, Ray Allen could play Rondo plays 1 through 3.
Right.
So it's not a whole lot, you know, when they're coming out, they're just going, who got 22? I got 22. You got Daryl?
Right,
it's that.
I never even thought about the fact that all four of those guys could play multiple positions.
Nobody was just like,
with the exception of Kendrick Perkins, he was the only one who.
I mean, but what his position was in that era of basketball was like, you can be an enforcer, Kendrick, because we got three guys that average 20 points or better in their career. We really don't need you to shoot it. And if you do, God bless you.
Right.
You, thank you. So,
Then second, so after we get out of that, it's hard.
I'm going Blake Griffin next.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. The Cyclops? Come on, man. Dude, you wanna make Blake Griffin nervous?
That 19.
Close the door, wind the clock down to 2 minutes, hand him a basketball, and say score.
That 19 point, debacle. He had 0 points, I think, in the whole fourth quarter.
I wanted to ask you this: is Blake Griffin the new Chris Webber?
You know what? He just rolled the ball into the court.
I remember at that time we went through that era together, and you were a huge Sacramento fan. And I've always been a Chris Webber talent standpoint. I think he's one of like the most. To this day, one of the most talented basketball players ever seen. Like, I mean, he was the first guy who legitimately was a center, grabbed that ball off the glass, and go coast to coast.
And throw it behind the back.
His talent-wise was off the meters. So I don't want to say, and then as talented as he was, I mean, that dude, if it weren't for Mike Bibby, I mean, he was so scared.
Let me tell you something.
His eyes.
I remember Webb and KG, that was conference finals, or conference semis. And KG's down, Anthony Peeler. He loses, I can't think of the point guard name. He loses the point guard, and they're like, KG, you gotta play point guard. And game 7, they gotta get this W. KG plays point guard, plays a 2, plays a 3. They win, and Webb is just like, every time they go to Webb with the ball, he's just like, Peja, please, hurry. Now, hot, wall, steam,
I mean,
fire,
on
burn.
Fire, like, on fire. In those fourth quarters, he would dominate through three, and in those Lakers series, every single time, he was looking for Bibby when Bibby wasn't on the court. He's like, Mike, just pass the ball. Bibby's sitting down.
He's in the huddle like this.
He can't play all 48 minutes.
Did they roll this ball in pepper spray? My eyes are burning. I can't hold it.
You know what? A1, that's a hell of a thing, and I'm going to go ahead and tweet that and take credit for it.
I think he is.
I don't think he's as talented as Chris Webber, not even the point of the argument. But no, in terms of a guy who can dominate through three and then just looks the part of being scared.
What game was that when they handed him the ball in the last second? He just like spun. He was like, basketball, no! Spun, fell out, lost the ball,
yes,
and then he got up. And then he got up like, I told you, don't hand me the ball when I'm not looking.
I remember that. It was that everybody talks about Chris Paul and how much of a bully he is, or that his teammates don't like him. And DJ says, you know, he dribbles too much. It's cool. Until you see when he doesn't. You know what I mean? Like that game, the same game you're talking about against the Spurs, Chris Paul reluctantly hands him the ball.
And
it was like a clear out for Blake Griffin. And he kicked the ball like
He had an allergic reaction.
And then they showed Blake Griffin. He's literally on the ground like, damn, what happened? And Chris Paul's like, but I dribble too much, right? Like, we got to give other people a chance.
Blake was on the ground like, does anyone have an EpiPen?
And so you look at it and you're like, no, I don't have a problem with it. And so here's now, Chris, there was a, I don't remember who it was or what show it was they were talking about. And they were just saying that in terms of, you can't blame Chris Paul in terms of the impact that he's supposed to have, he had. And if you watch that game, Chris Paul, his job is to distribute and set these people up. And if you watch these games, it was just clank after clank after clank. So you watch in the game seven, Matt Barnes doesn't score. Goes like 0 for 6. J.J. Redick
looked mean,
numbers
though.
Were like 2 for 11 or something like that. Blake Griffin can't hit the side of a barn. And the only thing DeAndre Jordan, the only thing he can do is catch alley-oops. And he bricks one of those to half court. You know, so you ask yourself, Chris Paul, he still finished with like 28 or 30 points.
Finished with double digit assists, I think, in every game.
Yeah,
that
so
series.
I mean, it's like he did his part, but
at and on one leg, mind you, this is on a leg and a half.
Right. So he sets these guys up, but that's when, you know, J.J. Redick, who had been so, he had such a good year. I think he ended up averaging 15 or 17 points a game, was a non-factor in 4, if not 5 of those games. And it's like, Chris Paul loses his effectiveness when guys like that are not scoring. That's what makes him great, is that, which is his job. All he
that's
can
what
do
also happens when
he
you
give shooter shots.
That's what also happens when you depend on J.J. Redick to be like your second leading scorer, third leading scorer. I mean, J.J. Redick is who he is.
Another guy that I think that went on great teams.
He was J.J. Redick is not a starting two guard in the NBA. Come on, man.
No, I agree. He's not a starting two guard on a team that's going.
Yeah, okay. He'd be a starting two guard in Minnesota or 76.
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I think that's right. Is that you see that those guys. That's what happens in the playoff. Everything gets smaller.
Yeah, the court shrinks.
Gets smaller. Every
the pace of the game
harder.
Slows down.
So
while it's more physical.
So in the regular season, it is great for J.J. Redick to average 17 points a game, and it's almost effortlessly when you play with a guy like Chris Paul, because you're going to get so many open shots. Blake Griffin's there. You know, the floor is just. I'm sure if you were to sit down with J.J., he would tell you that the shots I get in the regular season versus the shots I get in the playoffs are night and day. Yeah. It's not the same. So.
I mean, guys, you just got to think that in a regular season, you know, no one's really thinking about, all right, you know, make sure you bump them on every screen.
On every single screen.
Make sure, you know, but in the playoffs, and you know, I have to have this game.
Right.
Those details, they don't go unnoticed. They, you know, they're in there going, dude, I'm telling you, get physical.
You see, and that's the reason that I told you I didn't believe in a team like the Hawks. I see the thing, Kyle Korver's numbers. He shot, it was like almost 50% from the 3-point line in the regular season.
And do you
something
see him
ridiculous.
Right now?
It was like 47%. Yeah. And now it's like 33. And it's not because he's any worse of a shooter than he was. And it's not that he's trying any less. It's just, you know, when you put a guy like, Bradley Beal and you say, hey, he better not score.
Yeah.
And Bradley Beal says, okay, I'm going to follow him every single shot he get is going to be the hardest shot in his, cause I've said outside of Steph Curry, I think Kyle Korver is the second best shooter in the NBA. But now, when this is guys whose job is to make sure that you get zero open looks, now Kyle Korver is, and that's when you start saying things like, yeah, J.J. Redick can't be your second leading scorer. Kyle Korver can't be. No.
It can't.
And you watch the guys like the Spurs, they do those things with an integral, but whether it's Danny Green or it's Gary Neal,
But here's the thing.
It changes, but it's not.
Here's the thing with San Antonio.
They don't say Danny Green is our second leading scorer.
Mm. Here's the thing with San Antonio. Danny Green? Oh, so he's 0-for-5?
Yep.
Danny Green. Come here real quick. I left something in the car. I left a bag of nickels in the car and 240s of St. Ives. Can you go over there and check it out, make sure? Patty Mills. Yeah, you're in. Danny, don't worry about coming back. We're good.
Yep.
And you may not see Danny Green for like the next two games. Yep. And Patty Mills like, I don't know when I'm ever going to get out again.
Out the blue, you just reach down. Matt Bonner.
Come here.
Played in 3 weeks.
Yep.
Let's go. And Matt Bonner gets in there and goes 2-for-3.
I mean, but that is a style that Kevin McHale took to come from that 19th. He's like, look, James Harden, really? So this is, you know what? Don't even.
Corey Brewer. Worry about it.
Corey. James, can you go out into the garage and see if you can find that salmon I wrapped? and Corey Brewer comes in the game and is like, no problem. James, no, stay. No, we're good. I think we're fine here. But when you're that kind of coach, you're like, these are my guys. And another coach that coaches like that is a Tom Thibodeau. It's like, no, Doug McDermott can't get in the game. He's a rookie.
I'm going to play these guys 45 minutes, everybody.
You go 0-for-9 and, right. And you're still getting 40 minutes. Wait a minute. You tell me Doug McDermott can shoot? No, he can't shoot. He's just a rookie. Like, right. You get.
Pretty
you
sure his nickname is McBuckets.
Like, yeah, I'm pretty sure he was like one of the top 5 leading scorers in college basketball, but in history of college basketball, right. But that's neither here nor there. But I'm just trying to point out styles. And you have these handful of coaches that have that style. And then you have the coaches that are now in the playoffs that are looking around going, Jeff Teague, are you really, Schroeder, come here. Jeff, can you go in the storage room and see if you can find them old gym shorts I had from the ninth grade? And Ricky Schroeder's in there. And that's when you start maximizing your potential and your roster. That's when the coach is really like, and then those teams rebuild and they get better because some other team sees Ricky Schroeder or Patty Mills and they go, hey, you want a first round pick for that guy?
Yep.
And the coach is like, do
sure.
I?
Do I? Absolutely. Because I'll get another one.
And my wife. You want both? Yeah, like,
I'll get another one.
And that's the thing. So,
and then he continues to grab a player who contributes in the second round.
So with Doc Rivers, what you're going to get is you got seven guys. Who knows? Who really knows if before when they had the kid Bullock or any other guys they've had, who knows if they could really play or not? Because
let's not forget Eric Bledsoe was on this team.
Who knows? Like, you don't, because they don't get off. So he runs this tight seven man rotation. No matter what kind of productions he's get, like, if I was Doc Rivers, I may not play Blake Griffin in the fourth quarter. Just you know what, Blake? If you're not going to do anything, what the hell are you out here for? Spencer Hayes, get in. I mean, you just try anything.
Dude, I'm with you. I'm so – and it wouldn't be – you see Kevin McHale did it. He just took James Harden
out. I'm tired.
He's three times the player that Blake Griffin is right now.
And Popovich does it all – Popovich does it to Tony Parker.
On
he
the
does
regular.
It to whoever.
No, absolutely.
Like, Aaron Benz. Tim, come here. Aaron.
At the end of the day, it is about getting the best five players on the court that are playing
the best
at that
basketball
time.
At the time.
Yeah. And he does. I agree. So not to spend much more time on this, but going forward, the Clippers, what happens? Because I think that like they're close enough. I think Popovich takes over this team, and they could. I think you know.
Yeah, because
you're
going to find some players that you didn't know could produce. So I'm a big believer, man, in these Popovich Knights or whatever you want to call them are slowly changing the NBA to say, dude, it's not a seven man rotation. It's all 10 that dress need to be able to play basketball
and contribute. So
on any given night, like everybody has to be. So I think that what you're getting from Doc is you realize is that no, Matt Barnes isn't a starter. No, JJ Redick isn't a starter. You know, DeAndre Jordan is a starter. I mean, and Blake is a starter, and Chris Paul is. So now you look at the team, you're like, we aren't really that deep.
Right.
We're not that strong of a team. So then you got to go back to the drawing board and you know, is there a trade to pull off? Do you know DeAndre's up? He's getting the max. Let's just you know.
Right.
I mean, even though I would argue that why he should, but that's fine. He affects the game. You know, first team all defensive. I'll go with that.
Right.
Blake Griffin is going to get the max, of course, what Chris is. So then what pieces do you find? And you don't currently have any young expiring pieces that you see on the bench going, you know what, next year I see him coming off. And so they're essentially stuck unless they put something together, you know, J.J. Redick, a first-round pick, you know, but they're stuck.
I feel like if you could get something from Jamal Crawford, okay, if you can get something for him, take it. I feel like they need two starters who are legit starters. They don't even need to be better than Matt Barnes and J.J. Redick. They just need to be starting caliber players and then move J.J. Redick and Matt Barnes to the bench. I think if J.J. Redick and Matt Barnes are your sixth and seventh man off the bench, that's a good team.
That's a good team. I agree.
But you can't be that they're your starters, and then when they go cold, you look down, and you really don't have anything, and then you have Jamal Crawford, who you can't play Crawford and Paul at the same time.
Right.
Because Jamal Crawford needs the ball in his hands at all time, and Chris Paul is not giving it to him. You know what I mean? So that doesn't. So it almost it doesn't work. And then the second unit of Austin Rivers, Big Baby, so like it doesn't. And I don't understand the Spencer Hawes thing, because Spencer Hawes was doing very well before this, and he's not even like
he plays sparingly, like
if at all. And I want to say in the series we didn't see him at all, which is. I don't know. I'm not in their practice, so
don't worry.
It's hard for me to believe that he's that much. He's that there's much a, worse than he was.
There's a team in Texas. There's a team in Texas that's looking like Popovich, like this, the Hawes kid.
Him?
Yep. Get him down here. Get him down here Thursday.
Get him down here Thursday. That happens though is that Doc Rivers Popovich will send over like a third round draft pick, which doesn't even exist
in 1978. Right. 1978 third round pick.
A guy like Spencer Hawes, and you'll be watching the NBA Finals. And he'll steal 12 minutes from Spencer Hawes, at which this guy will have 8 points in the fourth quarter. And you'll be like, wow, who's the Spencer Hawes kid? And you'll be like, I was on the Clippers last year getting coaches' decisions.
Yeah. You know? That's where it goes back to, like I said, man. if you got guys that you're not willing, if you're not willing to play them, then why the hell are you on your team? And I'm just the biggest proponent.
And he has
that.
A skill set. Yeah. We're talking about guys with a skill set.
7 foot Hall's is a seven foot who can shoot.
Right. And they never even took advantage of that at all.
If you got guys on your team and they can't play, why the hell are they on your team? If you can't go to the eighth guy and say, look, you know what? Blake is out here shaking with the Glock. Go. And if that guy's not confident enough, not skilled enough to go out there and whether he's giving you the points, maybe he just gives you the energy. Maybe you don't know what it is.
Right.
But if you can't just look down your bench and say go, then right. that's an indictment on how you've built your team.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's exactly how Doc has built them. He's built them with a bunch of pieces that it's not like you know, someone's walking the door going, hey, we need Matt Barnes. I'm telling you right now. First round pick. You got
right,
it.
Right, right,
like,
right.
No one's walking the door going, Big Baby Davis. Oof, we've been looking for that post presence. So he's got these, right, right. So he's got these pieces that you're just like trading cars. Like, so you tell me you don't want this Wade Boggs with the Bennett corners for your rookie Ken Griffey?
Right.
You are crazy.
Exactly. On the other side, which is your side, Chicago. What?
Thibodeau has to go.
Okay.
And it's simple. You watch the antiquated offense. I was telling Delonte the other day, Derrick Rose has the ball. He's dribbling for 4 seconds. He's waiting for Mike Dunleavy to run off a single double screen, baseline, whatever side he picks. Then that doesn't work. You go to the post. And we run that play over. And we run it again. And then sometimes we'll give it to Jimmy Butler for him to do the same thing. When you watch the teams that beat us, I watch Matthew Dellavedova score 19. Took about five or six threes. Three guys shoot on the Bulls. But during the season, in the first two games, you don't play Nikolai Mirotic in the first two games. But just
which is unreal
2 weeks ago, Nikolai Mirotic was leading the NBA in fourth quarter scoring.
Right.
And when Derek was hurt, was propelling us to wins.
Oh, yeah.
But he can't play in the first two games of the playoffs? Are we serious? Because you
it
know
took
why?
It took an injury to Powell to get this.
You know why? You know why I can't play? He's a rookie. From now on, something goes bad, you don't feel like doing it, just look at your wife go. You're a rookie. Like, you're not taking out the trash. No, you're a rookie. Like the I'm going to say the arrogance, the pompousness of those coaches that just look at a guy and go, just because I'm 1 year out of college doesn't mean I can't play basketball.
Right.
At this level. And I think that has trailed Tibbs. You got a guy like Tony Snell who, when Jimmy Butler was out, I mean, I play FanDuel and I had Tony Snell a bunch of nights, and there were a bunch of nights Tony Snell poured in 20, 25. But he doesn't play until it's a 17-point blowout, and then he gets in the game. Then he knocks down about three threes and brings them back within striking distance. And you go, why isn't this just a rotation of players? Like, because you get those coaches who think, no, it's my system. It's my play calling. We won.
Right.
Yeah, it's my play calling. It was me. You know, and that doesn't work, man. And I think the story is stale in Chicago. I think you look at the players that the Bulls have amassed, even right now. Next year, that will be one of the best rosters in the NBA because Jimmy Butler has emerged. And now you don't need Derrick Rose to score 30. Jimmy Butler could score 30. Paul Gasol could score 30. I mean, you got a myriad of, but you also have to have an offense that's conducive to what they do.
How do you feel about, do you feel like that window's gone?
I feel like it's still there. I mean, because what has just happened is, okay, you feel like, all right, well, maybe the window's closing, but you just got equivalent of a top three pick in Nikolai Mirotic. I mean, he's better than probably five of the guys that'll be picked in the top 10 in this year's draft.
Easily. I don't disagree with that statement.
So you got him, you know, and then you still got a Doug McDermott who, I said this the other day, if Mike Dunleavy's sole job is just to run around and knock down open shots, non-contested shots, open shots, and he's 0-for-9, what the hell is it going to cue you to look down the bench and go, you can't do much worse? Like, you know, if you swap those roles and the Popovich way is like, if I can get 9, 9, 9, 7, 20, 15, if you start adding up those numbers, you look at that Popovich, that's San Antonio
always,
box score.
Always.
It's 6, 2, 7, 5, 9, 3,
yep.
20, 15,
2,
6, 6, 4, 9,
no,
2.
Absolutely.
And at the end of the, and then you get to the bottom of that total score and it's like 133. You're like, what the hell?
Nah,
but that's what it is.
He'll take his 4 from Bonner. He'll take his 2 3-pointers from Bonner and
goes to the free throw line. Like
Patty
Mills gets some 6.
Absolutely.
So that is how you win basketball games. Like, I mean, even Cleveland, I take my hat off to him. Everybody's playing. Everybody. I mean, only person to play is Brendan Haywood. And that's because he literally can't play anymore. but I'm just saying, other than that, everybody's playing. Kendrick Perkins got, I mean, he played. Like,
Cleveland's
they
doing
can't
it too.
Go into their bench nine deep. And we're down in the series, and we don't go into our bench 90.
How did that make you feel, though, when you watched and that game 7 when it was like they basically just didn't show up?
Well, I had read a story that said that Jimmy Butler had kind of barked at Derrick Rose a little bit. And to the tune of, man.
They're saying that Derrick Rose was being passive aggressive.
Like,
and just
dude, like if you're going to lead, lead. If you're not, you know, move out the way. And so Derrick Rose took the approach of,
Do you believe that?
I can't believe it. That's believable. Because there's no way I'm 5-9 in the first quarter with 12 points and I go into the second half and I take 4 shots. With the game, like, that's one of those games where he has to finish 9 of 28. And you just go, look, the ball just wasn't going. He gave us everything. You can't have that. But I think part of that is like, because they don't get shots easy, everybody's like, I gotta get my shot. Because you're not getting easy shots. It's not a free flowing of shots.
It's not.
So it's so difficult to get a damn attempt.
Why is that not on Derrick Rose? Because you're right. It isn't.
It's system.
You watch the Bulls play and it's not easy shots.
You watch how Thibodeau call. I mean, every time down, if anyone's had the games on TiVo, go down and watch Derrick Rose look this way. He always looks to Thibodeau and Thibodeau's always standing up on the sideline calling the set. Watch Popovich. 70% of the game, Greg Popovich is talking to assistants. He's laughing. He's joking. Maybe in a critical time, if they go on a little dry run, he'll stand up, call a set. Why? Because his offense is constant motion. It's like, dude, no, we're not going to come down here just because Tim Duncan has Matthew Dellavedova. We're not just going to feed him the post 10 times in a row. No. We're going to run our offense. And if he just so happens to get the ball in the post against Matthew Dellavedova in our offense, that's great. And I think, like I keep going back to, Kerr, the coach in Atlanta, Pop, these are the teams that we look at as our premier teams, man. And they're scoring. I'm watching Andre Iguodala, dude, who, if you told me that my life was on the line and he had to make a 3-point shot, I'd say pull the trigger and pull it twice.
Right.
Because he ain't making it. Right. And now you see him in games, he's knocking down shots. Why? Because that's how they practice, that's how they play.
And to prove the point, like, I feel like Iguodala is a better player than J.J. Redick, and Iguodala is where he's supposed to be coming off the bench.
Exactly. So you're telling me J.J. Redick's a better player than
Andre? Right.
Goes back to what, you know.
And he's definitely better than Matt Barnes. I can certainly tell you that. And he's coming off the bench. And the Western Conference, the teams are so.
Well, let me ask, wait.
Go ahead.
So if they fire Tibbs, who do you want to coach the Bulls?
I'd have two. I've got two guys. I wouldn't mind having the college coach in Hoiberg. From Iowa State, the Cyclones. I like his style of basketball. If you watched Iowa State play, they got, you know, their fours stretch and they share. You know, everybody gets a look. He plays his bench deep. And I know we say, well, he's never coached in the NBA, but he's a former NBA player, so he definitely understands the rigors of, you know, 82 game schedule. So I don't think that transition would be too difficult. And then the next guy, I like Gentry from Golden State. And the reason I like it is because he's had enough time now. He sat in a D'Antoni offense and he could see, like, all right, we can't play, you know, 2 seconds on the shot clock. We got to shoot the ball and think we're going to win. But we probably can play like 10 seconds. You know, he's seen enough tweaking of systems where I think that, and then coming from watching Steph Curry and those guys, don't confuse it. Yes, Steph Curry is a great shooter. Klay Thompson is a great shooter. Draymond Green isn't a great shooter. Andre Iguodala is not a great shooter. Sean Livingston isn't a great shooter. And these guys are guys that are making shots because of the system. And because they're put in places to make shots. If you watch an NBA practice and people always, you know, they get on radios and they go, such and such, I don't understand how he can't shoot free throws. I guarantee you go to the NBA practice and watch these guys shoot, you're like,
nobody misses.
Damn. Like, how does DeAndre Jordan go 50 of 50 from the three? You'd be like, I'm being dead serious. It would blow your mind.
Nah, Iguodala, if he was playing your pickup game,
like,
he wouldn't miss.
That's what I'm saying. And you go, and DeAndre Jordan doesn't make practice free throws. And you go in practice and you watch him go 110 of 120. That's my theory, man.
We have time? Where we at? Just not to spend.
27.
Okay, me and A1 were having this debate, and is actually glad to have you here so we can touch on this. I don't want to spend too much time, 2 minutes tops, really. Derrick Rose has emerged as this likable underdog figure,
right.
Okay, which is the role that A1 told me. He's a prisoner of the moment. He loves the moment.
Right.
Jeremy Lin fan. Whatever, insert guy who was here for 2 minutes, he loves him.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Beto Udrich.
Yes, loves him. Loves him all. And so he called himself, when Derrick Rose hit the buzzer beater, and, you know, I said, when are you a Derrick Rose fan? Nah, just rooting for the underdog. And here's my way I'm looking at it. This guy was number one draft pick, went to the major conference. I mean, he's anything but the underdogs. This guy's made $250 million and has really essentially done nothing in the last 3 years. Okay, so I'm thinking he's anything but an underdog, and it's not exactly media friendly. Doesn't come off as a guy who's just like, man, he's just out there giving it his all and he's going to fight through it and, you know, just run through the team, a balls to the wall, Russell Westbrook, put me in coach with one leg. Absolutely not that. And yet, he somehow has created this, we feel sorry and we're cheering for him guy. And where is that based in?
I think it's probably a three-part kind of question. I mean, I think you begin with, you know, where he came from, the neighborhood. And that's not, let me be very clear. Inglewood, Chicago, Illinois is not, that's not a crystal stair. And there are a ton of NBA players who've come from tough places. And so you start there. Then you begin with drafted to a city.
His
hometown that he idolized. Okay. And then the impact that Derrick Rose has in his community, you know, as far as.
And then you've got
when LeBron was in Miami and, you know, that battle that they had going on, and you got the little, everyone who doesn't
like the little guy.
That's just
because he's a little guy who went toe to toe with LeBron,
and so then you build that. So then you get the injuries, and then you get the comeback, and then you get the injuries, and then you get the comeback.
Right,
and you see a guy just like watching boxing, right? And people love what's the guy in Atlantic City, the boxer,
which one?
Redhead guy, him and the dude that killed himself got killed in Brazil. They always had these epic fights.
Oh, Mickey Ward.
Irish Mickey Ward and, Gambo
Gotti.
Gotti.
Arturo Gotti.
Arturo Gotti. Love Arturo Gotti. Arturo Gotti spent more time on the canvas than he did on his feet. But you love Arturo Gotti. Little guy, fall down, get up. Fall back down, get up. Fall back down 3 more times, get up. Fall back down 10 times, get up. Everybody, that's just how we are socially programmed. Is like, no one likes LeBron because, oh, he doesn't get hurt. But you hate that.
But then my thing was, like, I asked him, you know, he's, oh, the guy has a comeback and the injuries. Everybody always throws up the injury. When's the last time you heard the Andrew Bogut campaign? Anybody's just feel so sorry for Andrew Bogut.
Do you know why?
He gets hurt every year.
You know why? Because Andrew Bogut's a big guy. And that's honest.
And
man.
Andrew Bogut was never touted as like the leader
it's
of like
number
the
number one pick in the draft.
I mean, you got to think
not
you got
something.
Okay,
that,
so
I
how
mean,
about this?
Every number one pick doesn't necessarily
before
go on to lead their team to you
no,
know.
But I mean, the thing is, he just keeps getting hurt.
Before Derrick Rose, man, he was the mold of a point guard that folks had never seen, and that's just if you could start there, that's where the NBA started trending to like we can like you know they came up with the term the zero guard. Like, yeah, he just happens to be at the point guard, but he's athletic, he jumps, he runs, so you put all that into a mold, and he's a little guy, and he falls down, and he gets up, and then you get this. And the campaigns, quite frankly, Adidas and all those guys, they're great. I mean, that's how they position it. You got a little boy riding the bike in Chicago. I don't know if you noticed, the bike doesn't have but one peg on it. It's only one peg on the front, none on the side. Like, you, all those things, they just go. They go well, you know? And does he deserve it? I don't know. I say yeah and I say no. I say yeah for the fact that he's probably united, you know, parts of Chicago and fans and people because they're Bulls fans. And Derrick Rose is from Chicago and Chicago won. And, you know, he's been outspoken about the violence in Chicago. He's been outspoken about the school systems in Chicago. So you start playing into that philanthropist role. You're going to get people to love you, and you're going to get people to feel sorry for you.
I get it in Chicago.
It's worldwide, man. I mean, we're in a social media day now, so it's not like what he's doing just lasts there. It's everywhere.
I think, like, to piggyback on what he said, something I didn't even think about was just him going against LeBron. Like, at the period where everybody hated LeBron.
That's the antithesis. Right.
He was, like, the only guy that was, like, going to challenge LeBron in any kind of way. So,
and then, but that was also, now you look up, and that was, like, 3-4 years ago.
Yeah. But listen, that's going back to how we first started this topic, first started this barbershop show, that's the difference between him and Floyd Mayweather. Because you can go back and you can draw on that moment in time and say, man, whoo, that was a hell of a series and that was a hell of a play, and you will never be able to do that.
No, you're definitely right about that one. So let's just discuss real quick what happens next. We got two series.
One series. You got one series. like next game, you might see Golden State play 5 different guys. Like dude, like that's done. Dwight Howard's hurt.
And what do you think about the Cleveland Atlanta?
That's a 7-game series, and that's a 50-50 for me.
Wow. I got that as a 3-game series.
All right. Listen to what I'm telling you. The moving parts that Atlanta has will be so tough for Cleveland to guard. You know what helped Cleveland against the Bulls? Mozgov is looking at Joakim Noah like, please, I'll help you shoot it. You want me to get behind you and hold your guide hand? You can't do that with Al Horford. You can't do that with Paul Millsap. Like, they have what I like to call in baseball, it's called a 5-2. They have nothing but 5-2 guys.
That they do.
And that is the new basketball. We've got to reprogram our minds about how we think basketball should be played, because that's the new NBA. The 5-2 guys, like, dribble, pass, shoot. Not just rebound, look mean, and hard fouls. Like, so.
I still say
if Cleveland in 7, because they've got the best player on the planet.
If Kyrie is 90%, I got Cleveland in, I'll say 5.
In 7, and I just don't think, from what I'm watching from Golden State, they just have a different gear. They got a different gear, man, that they can go to. And now I don't see it. The only team in the league that I thought had that kind of gear was San Antonio. And I was only, I mean, they've got a really different, they've got a gear where they can get 40, 40, and 20, and 15, and a lot of different numbers can get thrown out on that paper. Like,
right.
So that's what I say.
Nah, I definitely think Golden State runs right through Houston. To be honest with you, I don't think Houston should be here. You know what I mean? Like,
how did you get here?
Yeah, I mean, Clippers should have handled business and should have. And now I think the Golden State Clippers series would have been the best series.
Yeah, because
that'd have been must watch TV.
You're gonna have point guard. You got a good point guard battle.
The game last night was pretty good though.
You know what? It was, and that was Houston's best opportunity to beat Golden State. 17-point lead in the second quarter, and Golden State's like, you're going to need about 30. You're going to need about 30 to get
a lot of horsepower, man. Yeah. Golden State's got they got a lot of gears, man. And the thing is, especially at Oracle, that's what makes it.
And that home court advantage is unlike any other, man.
It's impossible. And once it starts raining, it just starts raining.
Hear me.
It almost looks like the Cameron Indoor sort of thing. That once it starts, like, oh my god, like these threes are just coming out of every which way.
Dude, listen to me. They are the toughest out.
They are.
And it's simple because they're fundamentally sound, man. I mean, all their players do everything.
They got guys like David Lee who can't get on the court.
How about that?
David Lee could start on the Clippers, man. You know what I mean?
And they'd be happy to have David Lee starting on the Clippers.
And he can't even get on the court over there.
That's where we boil down to, man. Right now what I see from the Golden State, they're poised, man. And I would like, you know what I want to see? I'd like to see them win it because Curry comes out, gets some MVP. Now that'll be your second underdog story because it'll be the overlooked kid from Davidson
that
nobody.
That to me is an underdog story. And I mean, he wasn't the number one pick overall,
but I mean,
he wasn't a 5-star player.
But he was privy to the best trainers and one of the best. So it wasn't like Derrick Rose was like, we're going to camp. Yeah. Back here in the middle school, Curry's flying to Switzerland to meet with Das Hagendas to learn how to shoot a 3. Like, it's totally different. Like,
I get it.
It's nothing like, hey, Dad, can I see that black car real quick? For what? Oh, look at these shooting straps. Chanel.
Right. No, I hear you. I definitely hear you. So then in that scenario, then who? So you see Golden State winning it?
Yeah. Yeah, I got Golden State.
Hey, one of these two series, what do you got? I don't think the Golden State's...
When's the last time the best team in the league... First of all, when's the last time a 60-win team didn't win the NBA title? I'd like to know that.
Phoenix Suns?
I was going to say Dallas Mavericks. I know that for sure. There had to be one in between then.
How many wins did they finish with regular season?
That year that Golden State knocked them out? A lot. When they knocked them out
curious.
In the first
round. I'm just curious. That's a question I'm asking. I'm just curious to know.
See, that's the reason we have A1. He's going to have that information for you three weeks from now.
Look,
it looks like a computer, but it's not.
I get a text on my phone. You remember that Golden State thing you were talking about?
Yeah. It looks like a computer over there, but it's not. Yeah, so that's why we have him here to look these things up and give us this information, but it'll never happen.
So that's what I want to know. I mean, I know they were close to the Bulls. They were close to our 70-12.
Who are you talking? Well, matter of fact, Atlanta had 60 wins this year.
Golden State was close to our 70-12. They were close.
Yeah, they did. No,
they finished with like what 13 losses, 14 losses? No, maybe 19 losses.
Atlanta had 60 wins, if I'm not mistaken.
So you're 62-19. Did Atlanta have 60?
Atlanta this year? Yeah, Atlanta had 60 wins this year, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. 61, I think. 61.
Yeah, and they certainly won't be winning the title.
They may be there. We'll find out tonight. Tonight may shock you. Tonight may have you text me and go, I didn't really see this.
But what if they only need, and what, I mean, really, they need one.
You need one. And funny as it sounds, Atlanta has a cute little home court advantage. I mean, they get pretty raucous in there.
No, they don't. Atlanta's terrible.
What are you talking about?
It's probably going
Ludacris
right now.
Playing all that music?
Please. You could probably go right now and buy a ticket.
No, at the office. It's a different story.
The gate. Please. All right. Well, that concludes. You hear Calipari? It's crazy. I never really thought about it. In terms of, just never really thought about it, but realizing that how much money that those guys make, that it required them to make a $3 million pay cut.
Yeah, and do you realize this? Calipari's probably got a bunch of papers on his desk that's going, yeah, Cal, so how do we want to handle this class situation with Colley Stein? you know, Cal, this GPA thing, it's really coming down on me tough.
Now, I definitely
I'm really having a tough time shredding all these papers I wrote for.
Shredding them.
I'm pretty sure he's looking like, yeah, we've got one more run at this.
You think Calipari leaves?
Yeah.
You don't think he leaves this year, though?
I really think it depends on what kind of class he's rolling in, because he's a competitive dude, and now he's built a gold standard at Kentucky. And right now, that ain't what they got coming in the front door right now.
And if he don't, I do think if he was to put together anything less than a championship caliber team, they will be kicking him out the door.
I'm about to say, how about this? He doesn't put together that quality team that just loses, but he puts together a team that is not of the echelon or tier that the teams he's been putting together, and they still lose.
Right.
Thanks, Cal. Great.
Yeah. No, I think a 3-win season and a Sweet 16 exit, they'd be calling for his job.
Absolutely. And I'm pretty sure he's smart enough to know, like, that quote I hit last month. That'll never be done again. So,
right.
Yeah, you get out while you can, while you hide. So,
I agree. But do you think I think so much of Calipari is bringing those recruits in, and you can't do that in the NBA. So what kind of success would you even have in the NBA? Where it's not about just bringing in, hey, I'm going
to
do something different. I'm going
to
put an all-star team in the NBA together.
He lost in New Jersey as a coach, and it didn't work out. And I think that's one of the things that probably burns him up a little bit too, is his failure. And on top of that, he's smart enough to know that, man, you can put together these 5 freshman All-American best players in the country, but it's going to be tough beating a 5 seniors that have played together that are 22, 23, and grown men in a one game, you know, winner take all. Because
I'm just not so sure
where those young guys aren't in check of their emotions. Just I called that Wisconsin loss. I mean, win. I told you guys that. Because those guys are men that are in it can check their emotions.
Calipari's first day, he hands the assistant the papers. Curry, Harden, LeBron, Jamarcus Cousins. I'm gonna need these guys.
Oh no, it's definitely a fantasy list.
I'm gonna need these guys.
It's like this.
What are these names for?
Can you call
That's
Mike?
How I did it at Kentucky.
Yeah.
I'm great at home.
Yeah. Load up the jet. I'm gonna go talk to Curry.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't work that way. You haven't seen me. I'm great.
What do you mean? Give me the briefcase.
Right.
Give me the briefcase.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way. So we'll just pay him. It definitely doesn't work that way.
I said, give me the checkbook. That's it. Give me the checkbook. I'm going to have to go.
Wait till the sales pitch I'm about to give all 5 of them.
Yeah.
I never get turned down.
I mean, I think he comes to the NBA, man. I really do. You know, you watch.
What if he came to the Bulls? Would you be excited about that?
No.
Okay. No. So he's just not in your yard.
All doors are open except my door. Okay. Cal, no, we're good here. We don't have a coach. Yeah, I know, but we're still so good here.
We're like kind of looking, but not really looking.
Our assistants are amazing right now, so we're just going to ride this thing out. Scottie Pippen's going to be a player coach. We've got some big things on the horizon. So I just think we're just not going to do that.
So we got some big things on the horizon. All right. Well, we've got a game tonight, so maybe the Hawks is their opportunity to show me something.
You know, I predict these games. Hawks win tonight, and it ain't close.
Mm.
Hawks win more than 5.
Okay. Okay. Anything you want to say before we get out of here, anyone?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, make sure you guys all come back. Check us out next week.
A1 will have our stats for us. We'll be locked and loaded.
Maybe. That's maybe. Not a promise.
Yeah. Depends.
That is not a promise. But make sure you all come back next week. Download the podcast, iTunes, Barbershop, Player's Voice. Subscribe, and that way it automatically loads on there every time there's a new show. Facebook, playersvoice.com. App Store. What is it, A1? On the Android Store?
Same thing, Barbershop.
BarbershopPlayersVoice.com. All right, TJ, thank you.
Hey,
I look forward to seeing you next week,
brother.
All right, take care.
Same bat town.